Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Today in the studio, I've got Joan Moser of Spoken Impact. She's the founder of Spoken Impact, and Joan brings a unique talent mix of corporate communications and product marketing, public speaking development, and business communications training to every assignment. With more than 25 years of practical business work experience, Joan helps clients develop speeches and business presentations that zero in on the interests of the audience while creating content that addresses them in an engaging, memorable, and persuasive way. Thanks for being here, Joan.
Wonderful. Glad to be here.
Yeah. How are you feeling?
Great. This is fun.
You have that enthusiasm for every speaking engagement?
Yes, of course.
I once heard, when you're in the business.
Right. Yeah. I once heard Harvey McKay say at the beginning of a speech, and I don't know if you're familiar, I think most of your listeners might be, that he's a author and columnist, and he said at the beginning of his talk, "This is the last time I'm ever going to give a talk." And then he had a powerful pause. And he said, "That's what I tell myself every time because I want to make sure it's my best."
Oh, that's a great way to think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He writes for the Star Tribune yet, doesn't
he? He has a column. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They pick it up.
Yeah. Excellent. Tell us a little bit about where you grew up.
Well, I'm from the East Coast, so my family all came from that part of our great nation. And about the age of 13, I came to Minnesota. So I've lived in Minnesota since then and love the Midwest. It's my preference. I've never had an interest to live somewhere else. And I like the Midwest style.
What state were out east?
Connecticut.
Okay. Is part of your family still out there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Oh. Got to get that plane ride back there pretty regularly.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So what did your parents do for a living?
Well, my mother was a writer, and my father was in the earlier on, I'd say computers. You know, today that whole profession has changed so much. Yeah. So I think it's really easier for me to just say computers.
Right. And family size, were you an only child?
Or? I have a sister.
You have a sister?
Yep. 2 years older.
Okay. And is she on the East Coast?
Nope. She lives in San Diego, loves the sun.
Loves the warm weather.
Yeah.
So you get to go east, west coast, and the Midwest.
Right.
Traveling the country. And what were some of your interests as a child growing up in Connecticut?
Well, my husband finds this to be a charming story because he realizes it's probably true, because it is. But my father always loved his studio or study desk. He always loved to sit at his desk in the study and do all his paperwork and bookkeeping. And when he raised us, it was very important to him that we also did our bookkeeping and studied at a desk. So both my sister and I grew up with steel case office desks in our bedrooms. And I spent many, many, many hours at my steel case office desk. And one of my interests was any project I could do at my steel case office desk. So,
oh, that's excellent. And you still work
with a steel case office desk? Yes, probably. Just pretty close.
Well, there are some themes that follow us from our childhood to adulthood that, make it kind of connecting our work with our childhood play. Yeah. What are the fewest, fondest memories that you have as a child?
Well, I got to spend an enormous amount of time with my grandparents, but my grandmother probably more so than my grandfather growing up because they were right up the street from us. So I feel very lucky that I got tons of time with her. And she and I used to play board games together all the time. So I'm a big fan of board games. If anyone throws out, "Oh, let's do a board game," I'm right on it. Oh, I love
the board games too. Yep. Did you play cards too?
Yep, but Board games just jump out at me more.
Okay.
More interesting.
Sure. And what were some childhood challenges that you felt like you were in a position where you needed to overcome?
I think anybody, when they move as a youngster, is always a little bit of a challenge to go from living in the East Coast and then living in Minnesota. My first winter was a challenge. Not that they didn't have winter in Connecticut, but for some reason, back in the 70s, those were cold winters. Yeah. They started like October 31st, it seemed, sure.
Yeah.
So that's always a little bit of a challenge. And at that point, it was my sister, my mother and I, and so we all needed to work. So I started working at 13. So that was important.
What kind of work did you do?
I got to be I don't know if they call it I don't know the role exactly that they call it, but we lived right next to the Old Lock Theater. So we got to do all of the hosting as people came to the theater and stayed at the theater. And a lot of us worked at the Old Lock Theater. It's just an example of one of the summer many, many jobs. Actually, that was year round.
And what kind of led to the starting Spoken Impact?
Oh, well, I had parted ways with a company I'd worked for a number of years, and it was 1999. And I thought maybe I might be a marketing consultant for about a year to sort of make a decision. Did I want to go to companies that are technology companies, which is what I had been working in. So all the companies I worked in did some pretty complicated technology offerings.
Sure.
And I thought, well, if I take a year, I'll decide, does anything new pop up in that area, or do I want to shift? And if I do, how do I do that? And it was also at the time that we had an internet bubble. Mm-hmm. Everybody was out pitching some sort of a business that had something to do with the internet. And I would go and look at watch these presentations and say to myself, oh my goodness, that's awful. I could help that person. And before I knew it, I had clients, and I did nothing but my first 2 years helping CEOs of startups develop their investor presentations. So that's how it started, and I never went back to work in corporate America.
That's excellent. And did those clients then help fund your startup? Or did you have money you put into the business?
In the sense that if I'd never gotten any money, that would have been tough. So they paid, but I'm a service business, so we're not manufacturing anything. We have a lot of equipment requirements. We have an office, and we have overhead for employees and space and IT, but the startup cost is not huge.
Right. Yeah, you were able to launch within your means. Yeah. Okay. My life purpose is to use my voice, courage, and creativity to create space for others to revolutionize their lives, their leadership, and their businesses. And so I was wondering, you've had a chance to kind of think about this ahead of time, and I was wondering what your life purpose is.
Well, it's obviously a thought-provoking question. Sometimes it's always at the tip of your tongue, and other times you do have to, you're right, Nancy, think about it a little bit. I thought the Jack Canfield example is a great one about how our talents are something each person has, different ones, and how I think it is great to be able to take your talents and use them so that they help directly or indirectly others. And sometimes we get to see it more directly. And I guess I've been very lucky that with Spoken Impact, we can see pretty quickly what we've done if our talents and the way we coach and give ideas help somebody. So that is very rewarding.
Yeah. So do you feel like you're doing your life work?
I've never used a term like that. I think I feel very fortunate to do something that's pretty fulfilling.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like so even if you aren't totally conscious of it, you're doing the work of it. So you would probably shift into something else if it wasn't feeling like it was your right life work.
that might be true.
Yeah. So you didn't need to, you figured that out early on. And you plugged yourself in a way that really has brought you a lot of joy, and you've helped so many people, thousands.
I think you probably are correct.
Okay.
I enjoy working with people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you're a people person, the joys are kind of there all the time, because people are such... They're a source of new ideas. It's kind of countless when you get to work with people. So that, I guess, is my greatest enjoyment. I just really like being on a team and working with others and being part of that.
Excellent. We mentor. So can you share with us a little bit more about some of the services that you do provide for people?
Well, I sometimes just try and make it really easy and say, no matter where you are along the journey in your career, if you want to be a better public speaker, we're there for you. So there's a number of different areas that's going to pop up. It's going to pop up when you start going to meetings. It's going to pop up when someone asks you to give your first presentation. It's going to pop up when you're leading teams. And we're there to help you both deliver this, develop your delivery skills, but also create content and make sure that you really are connecting and developing the right rapport with your audience.
So when people come to you, do they have like some of their script that they're working on presenting?
And then many times, especially with private coaching. If we were hired by a firm to train their entire team, maybe not all of their team has something currently that they're developing.
Mm-hmm.
But often when we do private coaching, because mid and level and higher executives are often presenting.
Okay.
They often have something coming up.
Sure.
It's pretty typical.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you also do PowerPoint presentations with them, and you do taping.
Yep, we videotape. The best way to know how you're coming across. Get a sense of it. Absolutely.
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think you do have to get more and more comfortable watching yourself and being able to do a personal critique.
And do people, like, once they are videotaped, do they watch it over and over again to really...
No, I would say most people fearfully watch it initially.
Yeah.
And we'll have a rare person who really understands the value of really looking at it and looking at it more than once. But most people don't happily go and do that. And that's why it's really good to have a coach to do it with, because mm-hmm. we are too hard on ourselves. And it's really important that we understand where all our strengths are.
Yeah.
And then if you have gaps that you need to fill, how you can do that and how very, very, very capable you are of doing it. Many people come with the misconception that others are somehow born with these skills. Nobody is born a great public speaker. Everybody develops it over years of practice.
Sure.
And so.
And how do you give feedback? Do you have a rule of thumb of how you deliver feedback? And
well, it's the old methodology that people do better in any situation. Public speaking is no different, where you first learn where you are strong and you know where you can build versus starting off first where you're weak. And so that's mm-hmm. obviously part of our approach. It's interesting when we work with individuals, and I'm going to put this in a private coaching scenario because you can't always do this in group training because there's too many people and too many things going on to do that. But in private coaching, you can allow the individual to go through a number of different speaking scenarios, doing different types of talks. And it really helps most of our clients, not all of them, but I'll say 90%, realize that they've got skills they're using in one scenario, but they're not using it in another. And it's not that they don't know how to or they couldn't. They just aren't tapping their abilities.
Sure.
And we're there to show them how interesting it is that in this scenario, you did this. You were great at storytelling. Over here in this scenario, you were very monotone and flat. Over in this scenario, you seem to have more energy. This one, you didn't seem to have much. What is it that made it possible? Let's pull those together so that they can see it.
Oh, that's a great way to help a person really develop their skills, to really focus on their assets and to be and have them present in different ways.
Right. Yep. Discovered early on, if you only do one type, you miss how broadly capable people really are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was a question that Mike had regarding different populations of people. So if you're an engineer and you're giving a presentation, do you coach them differently than if they're a doctor giving a presentation there, or somebody in construction who is talking to a number of different people in different areas of expertise?
I'll answer that with a yes and a no. So let's start with something that we pretty universally believe, and it's actually kind of a tagline on a lot of the work that we do, and it happens in business over and over and over again. A few exceptions, but for the most part in business, the engineers, the IT folks, the attorneys, the head of operations, just about all of us, even people running marketing in the ad agencies, we all get over-focused on all the information we have to share.
Oh, yeah.
And in every scenario, whether we're at a meeting, whether we're in front of an audience, whether we're on a webinar, we over-deliver information. Mm-hmm. And when we get into information dumping mode, we disappear. And our whole training is around stop presenting all that information.
Yeah.
And start connecting to the people who are in front of you. And it takes knowing something about why they're in front of you, what's important to them, what's of interest to them, and how do you link your content to them. And so it takes a little bit of prep work, mm-hmm. and then understanding how do you keep people connected to you. It certainly isn't by information overload.
Yeah.
So there's the part about, is there something we would say to everybody the same? We say this message over and over again to all individuals pretty much in business, because they all suffer this problem.
Sure.
And they disappear in all their information. That said, about is there something that you would do differently? We work with, and this tends to be something we start to do when somebody's at a mid-level or higher, is we start to work with them on the adapted styles of a connected communication leader. So what we're noticing is that you, like me, probably have a communication style that's your strength.
Mm-hmm.
And the engineer in particular would have a communication style where they're very good at being precise in, let's say, a particular content that they're doing. Actually, maybe some of the engineers are more verbose than they need to, but I meet some who are very precise. It depends upon the individual, right?
Yeah.
So that might be their strength. Mm-hmm. They tend to get to the information very quickly, and they are able to partition and organize it. But try to inspire somebody. They're not such good in the inspiration category.
Yeah.
You or I maybe were a little bit stronger in inspiration, not quite as good in the data detail presentations. What we've learned with our executives is that there are four different types of styles they really need to learn as they go up the ladder, because in the end, you're going to do talks that require you to know all of them and master them well. And the four boxes are really learning how to have a commanding style. It's a style that needs to show up at senior meetings with the boards in crisis communications. You've really got to be able to shift to those parts of you that use your commanding style. It's part of you gaining that trust with that audience.
Yeah.
And then there are other times when you really have to pull out a very, very persuasive style, heavy, heavy head and heart mix mm-hmm. in how you communicate. And really what you're trying to do in these persuasive situations is you're trying to get that commitment to yes. So it's not just a soft thing.
Right.
It's a very much a definitive end game. And that takes another kind of very strong skill sets to be able to pull those off that you're learning as you're developing them. But then again, senior leaders, you move up that ladder, you need to be able to influence, you need to shift thinking of your peers, of the industry, of your board, of your employees. And you need to learn storytelling and metaphors, and you need to be able to say things in visionary ways. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, I've just mentioned commanding, persuading, and I've mentioned influencing. There's also that inspiring. How do you get people motivated to do it themselves?
Yes.
And you need personal storytelling. You need to be okay sharing your vulnerabilities. You need to be able to really expose a real personal conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of us are as good at that as these other boxes, but those are the things that we find individuals need to grow into as they evolve as leaders in their communication styles.
Absolutely. That makes so much sense. And to have four different categories, you can kind of see where you would tailor each part of the speech and focus on a different area. Oh,
but regardless where you start your career, as a strength, we can all learn those. Absolutely. I feel very certain about that, having, worked with a lot of folks.
Right.
It really is amazing what people can do.
Oh, that's really, when they focus in and are committed to making some changes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and to be part of that process must be really rewarding as well. Yeah. I was wondering what kind of tools do you have Strengths Finder, or I know as a common tool to help people. You said that you focus on their strengths and kind of help them to focus on what they do best and then kind of build out from there.
Mm-hmm. And definitely that, whether it's the Strength Finder, we don't use that particular tool because that's related to more of a career and the kind of occupation you would have.
Mm-hmm.
But people, I think, do well when they can see on a grid or see in a one picture sort of where they have strengths and then where they have gaps. So we've got a communications assessment tool that allows us to have them present and speak in a number of cases. And then we can show them the trends of where they've been strong consistently, where they only have some strengths in some areas or situations, and where they've got kind of consistently gaps. And then you can start creating a plan to work with each other on that piece of it. So that's how we help people, especially in how they're coming across.
Mm-hmm.
We will shift gears when we start to really talk about what's the content, what's your choices, and what you're saying and how you're saying it.
Sure.
I think people don't realize how far they can go and how far they are. And that's why we were talking about the videotaping. The videotaping isn't supposed to be let me pain you over the way your hair looks today. No, it's about to say, look at what's working. Let's build on that, because everybody's got really good stuff they can work on.
Yes. Yeah. And that's so great that you're focused in on that instead of everything that they're doing wrong right away, which is sometimes what I think of, if you're going to a speech coach or if you're going into a group where you're learning about and improving your speaking skills.
Well, one of my coworkers, I love the way she explained this one time when she was approached about why she wasn't giving harsher feedback and critiques. And she said, it's interesting. You take a young child and they are trying to learn how to walk. What do? They crawl around, they try to get up, and then they fall down and they cry. Do you admonish them for having tried to stand up, and when they cry, bad, bad, bad? No, you say, look what you tried to do, and you give support behind the good thing they did.
Yeah.
And I don't know when it switches in our adult heads that somehow I'm better off if you could just spend more time telling me about how much I didn't get done, and instead of look at the path on the way to it. And so she was really trying to help this individual understand. I don't think really people realize they feel like they want it and then they leave and they can't process it because it hasn't been given to them if they the way they say they'd like it.
Give it to me straight.
Yeah.
Well, there's a way to process it properly and a way not to process it properly. And our job is to make people want to show up again, not just in our office, but in front of a group
yes.
and feel really good about it and yeah. want to do it. So yeah. that's our job, I think.
Yeah. I don't know when that internal critic shows up, but it seems like it must show up pretty early in our lives.
Most people's critic is pretty harsh, and so we don't usually need to add more difficulty there. We want yeah. to help manage it.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. yeah, I can see why that technique is so effective. You know, it really builds a person up. Excellent. Well, you've been married for how long?
We're not quite 30 years. There. Somewhere between 25 and 30 years. I get my husband to verify one or the other.
Yeah. And he recently went through a hip surgery like I went
through.
Yes, we
had a yeah. discussion. We did. Got to drive this morning for the first time in weeks. So, yes,
oh,
that was great.
That must have felt liberating.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're getting back to your, you know, life again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's good that he, yeah, that's, you forget how much those little things mean to you, being able to just go and step in a car and just start driving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you decide that you wanted to not have children, or did you want to share anything about that?
We were in that category that there was plenty of going on that never came up. So it was not the direction we ended up going.
Okay. And have you always felt like your husband's been supportive of your business and what you two are creating?
Yes, he worked for corporate America jobs for years, and only recently actually has joined Spoken Impact on the team.
Okay. So, and what's his role?
Very operational. As we keep adding new services and offerings to our clients, there's an awful lot going on behind the scenes that needs to be managed. So he handles all of our IT and all of our operations and even purchasing. He's kind of one of those jack of all trades, but all of us need that in companies, right? Small companies, you need somebody
yeah.
who's jack of all trades.
Absolutely.
So he'll show up in the most unusual places doing something he didn't actually expect, and so he's very helpful that way.
I see. What's his name?
Mike.
And does he also do public speaking?
Nope.
No.
No, he's behind the scenes.
Okay. He likes that the best.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody plays a role.
Yeah.
We don't need more. We've got a great team of trained professionals in that area. So.
Yeah. And have you developed all the materials that you use for your company?
Yes.
They're copyrighted.
Yep. Yes, I have over the years.
Can you give us some snippets of or a glimpse into the future? What are you thinking about? How are you thinking you want to grow?
Well, way we've been growing is by just expanding the offerings that we continue to provide. So I look at it as what additional offerings would individuals be interested in early in their career, mid-range in their career, later in their career. And we've been more and more developing tools for senior leaders from all of our private coaching. And we're just starting to really fine-tune a leadership communications offering for that senior level. So we're kind of playing around with that course offering yet to be sort of rolled out, because we're able to still do it in private coaching and some sort of custom pieces for clients. The last few years, we've added an event that we do 3 times a year called Speaking of Business. And it's a great way for us to visit and see all of our clients and people who we've never met before even come to these events. And that's wonderful. We have about 150 to 200 people show up, and we pick a topic for the morning around communications and bring industry leaders in to talk about it. So that's a great way for all of us to grow and kind of delve into something a little bit more. So we're talking in December about communicating change. Yes. Which is a very complex area of communications. And what does it really take to reach the individuals in your organization usually? I mean, you certainly have outsiders, but we're going to focus mostly on those in your organization and how you effectively do it. So that's our topic for December.
That's a great topic. Yeah, oh, wonderful. Okay. Yeah, I get those text messages that you send out for the upcoming events. I'll need to come to one. Great.
There's a seat for you, Nancy.
All right. Excellent. Do you have thoughts about expanding to other cities or...
Well, we have a program called the Business Edge Speaking Groups, which we started about 3 years ago. And that program has a real good a model that can be replicated. It was designed heavily to be a replicated model. Mm-hmm. And it is run by our team of facilitators. And one of the questions you and I had been sharing about sort of business challenges, we developed this program 3 years ago. And at the time, and this is how much technology is changing, at the time we thought we might put all our materials on an app, but we knew we would be dealing with a fair amount of money to have the app written for us. And we still knew there were so many things we wanted to change and learn.
Yeah.
We thought, let's not invest in an app yet. Let's do paper so everybody gets a book.
Yeah.
And the speaking groups are 3 times a year. And we've gotten up to as many as 8 groups per season. So just a math project here. You have 8 groups, 15 people per group. We're almost 150 books a season do you have to be put together.
Yeah, it gets that's
to be
a lot.
Very big production thing that we have to do.
Yeah.
And we've been watching this sort of bloat and we think, gosh, how are you, it just isn't manageable.
Yeah.
On any scale. So in the period of time from when we started 3 years ago, there's now do-it-yourself apps. Didn't exist 3 years ago, but the app market has completely changed.
Right.
So now we can go and take the book, which we feel much more like it's final. I mean, everything's slight changes, but for the most part,
the core of it.
The core is really solid. We've been keeping it pretty solid now for about a year and a half. And for instead of thousands of dollars, it's $30 a month to have your own app. And it's really kind of impressive. Things have changed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it gets cheaper. And you think what's cost prohibitive at one point, you can wait a while and there's another way in which you can deliver something that makes it a lot more manageable. Well, that sounds exciting. It's a nice, so you are growing, changing, shifting.
They're little things, you know, they're not overnight big things, but they make a difference because it means a better experience in this case for our members of the groups. And it allows us to put our funds towards the videotaping and the facilitating and the things that I think mean more to them than the paper books.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, terrific. And over the years, have you always, whenever you've made changes in your company, have you always been able to cash flow it with the money that's coming in?
Yes, so far, yes.
So we
do have a line of credit. I don't want anybody listening to think we haven't used a line of credit.
Yeah, but that's totally different than, getting outside money or, I mean.
Yeah. No friends and family, no VC, no angels, none of that.
That's exactly, it. Well, and it sounds like you're an amazing money manager, keeping track of everything.
So far, I loved cost accounting when I was in college.
Okay. And that has served you well.
Yes, it's a good topic.
Okay. And is there any advice that you would have for any service business owner?
It's interesting you sort of said for a service business owner, and perhaps this extends to anyone starting a business or running a business, but for certainly for those of us in service, most of us who are owners and founders are the sales engine of the company. Mm-hmm. And I know I've received different advice over the years about this. In the years I've had the company, I have not been the only salesperson. I had a business partner for a number of years, and she did sales along with me. I've hired contract salespeople. I've hired employees that part of their role was sales. So I've done a number of different things. But by and large, if I had an aversion to selling or sales, this company wouldn't exist. And I'm amazed at the number of people who tell me one of the reasons they have not developed or grown a business or even closed the doors is they really did not enjoy the sales part of it.
Right. Yeah, and I hear that too.
It's a really critical part is to be able to go out and bring the business in.
Yeah. And usually it's kind of connected to a person's passion. And so that kind of exudes, but
it's helpful.
Every now and then, people do run into a situation where, they can't stand the sales. But that also is a skill you can learn.
It definitely...
It may never be your favorite thing, but if you can connect it with your passion and for your desire to build relationships with people and add something to their life that makes it better... I think that that's an easier way to kind of get to that end point.
Well said. Well said. Yep. It's not really sales.
Yeah.
Relationship. It's sharing what you do. And if what you do is a fit, that's great.
Well, that's sometimes what I've always liked about your approach. I mean, I've never felt like it's been, you know, like a traditional sales. I just have always felt like you kind of just did it kind of naturally.
Well, I appreciate that feedback.
That's good.
Hard to know.
And well, has your industry been affected where the economy is?
Oh, it's very, very much. We've got lockstep during the recession.
Yeah.
And of course, most businesses were affected by the recession. So it's not like I'm trying to say we were unusual, but it's a soft skills
in 2008
business. Yeah. So if companies have to find a place to cut back, they will. What we saw, which is really interesting, and it's part about wanting to have services that meet different constituencies, is that what we call corporate training, where it's coming through more of a group dollars, maybe it's HR's dollars, the training department's dollars, that kind of spending really, really got pulled back in. Whereas our executives, the ones that had some of their own individual budget, they were spending more because they finally had some time. And they said, if I don't do it now, when am I going to get time to invest in myself?
So did that offset the loss on the other side?
Oh, we certainly had a drop in business. Yes.
And how did you recover from that?
Well, I shifted a lot of the full-time contract.
Okay.
That was the fastest way to do it.
Because you found that it was immediate?
The change from the recession? No. No, that happened over time.
Okay. But all of a sudden for you, cash flow-wise, it was like, I need to make a decision here. I can't continue to employ, you know, this many people when I'm...
Right. It was progressive, though, Nancy. It didn't just... it was each one came at... Because I don't know about everybody else's business, but we didn't know the full impact or how long initially. So there wasn't much of a change in 2008. We were sort of trying to gauge. So then you kind of go into 9 and you say, well, maybe this one adjustment is all we need. Then you're into 9.5 and early 10. Maybe this other adjustment is the only. So it was a process until you stop having to adjust.
Right. And you're noticing things are starting to turn around. Right. Contracts are easier to get.
Yeah.
One of the critical skills that an entrepreneur needs is their ability to adapt and to get a sense of what's going on, the pulse of what's going on so that they can and notice what's going on with their cash flow and how they're shifting their activities. Like with the service business, you know, there's work that you do on a daily basis to generate income, and then you end up doing the work. But you also need to also be planning for more work in the future. Otherwise, you'll go through a real downflow in your cash flow. Right. Have you been able to manage that really pretty consistently now because you, the longer you've been in business?
Yeah, I keep pretty detailed records. I know all of our trends every single month. I know what our margins are by every project and every quarter. I mean, everything's pretty heavily tracked. I have someone on my team that's their job. We know where we are in the cash lever all the time as far as what's coming in for receivables. So I'm not saying I can't be caught off guard. Of course I can be, but for the most part, it's having someone on your, it'd be difficult for me to do it in addition to everything else I do. So somebody on my team does that for us.
So what are your favorite software programs that you use for finances and for
we use
tracking?
QuickBooks and okay. We have some Excel interfaces, but nothing.
Okay.
Nothing very fancy.
Yeah. Well, QuickBooks has a lot of tools that are really helpful. Yeah. All right.
Yep.
And do you use that to track your clients as well? Or do you have a separate database for your client?
CRM. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. All right. Well, this was really helpful for a lot of business owners, you know, to be able to talk about kind of the brass tacks, you know, what's going on in the business and how do you manage certain things and keep track of, and what do you need to keep track of? So it's helpful to hear kind of what your perspective is and how you've been successful these years and managing a staff and keeping your eye on the pulse that's, you know, of what's going on and how to plan for the future. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think the conversations that I often have with business owners is the managing the, like you said, almost the adaptability piece of it.
Yes.
And it's, we never know. Our last recession was 8 years ago now, as far as the beginning of it.
Mm-hmm.
And more than likely, I'm going to see another.
Yeah.
Because I started the business in a recession, just coming into a recession. I've gone through that major one. So more than likely, I've got one or more coming. And so that is part of what we think about as we consider investments and direction and who's on the team and how do we react to it. And it could be, again, years before we see it, but guaranteed we're going to see something.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have a realistic perspective. Yeah. So you plan as much as you can.
Right.
Well, thanks so much for being here. It's
Thank
nice
you for
to reconnect.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Okay. And I will come to your event in December. I'll check my calendar.
We'll find you a seat.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Mike Cabea, for our sound engineer, photographer, editor. All around great friend. We'll see you next week.